Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning, everyone, and welcome to Blogger News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and this is another in our ongoing series, The Food Revolution Papers, a chance to explore the highly political world of food. Joining me, as always, are my good friends, the writing and research team of Manny Barling and Ashley F. Brooks. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Simon.
Good morning, Simon.
I was watching CNN this morning. Watching's a bit of an over-exaggeration. It was on in the background. And there was a segment about the big Obama speech tonight, and that a number of Republicans have decided to boycott attending it. The sound bites were the usual expected rhetoric, too busy working to lollygag around and listen to more economic hot air, but that there was one absolute classic. I missed the guy's name, but he was a Louisiana representative, and he had the absolute best excuse of the day. He had a more pressing prior engagement. The Saints were playing.
Well, I think that's a more pressing prior engagement in New Orleans.
Absolutely. You don't think that's more pressing?
Than
14 million people finding a job? You don't think that's more important?
Right. Well, it got me thinking. And this speech, from everything I've been able to gather, is going to be another round of let's create jobs. And to this end, I have a wonderful idea, and I'd like to bounce it off the pair of you. Quite honestly, I view this as the best, quote, shovel-ready project on the planet. What they need to do, or what Obama needs to do, is create a subsidy for GMO farmers that will allow them to employ low-wage labor to dig up the superweeds that Monsanto's Roundup no longer kills. I mean, is that shovel-ready or what?
Oh, I agree.
That is genius, Simon. That's absolutely genius.
Well, hopefully someone from the Obama administration is listening into this program, and they're right at this moment going, hey, hold the presses. We got this great idea.
It's just another way for them to benefit Monsanto.
Exactly.
That's a great idea. Although they would have to do, I think, which company, I don't remember which company you were talking about. I think it was ConAgra or maybe it was Cargill, where you said that they were busing people in, they were taking poor people off the street, giving them cash so no taxes are ever paid, and then letting them do the absolute worst of the jobs, and then putting them on the street filthy, and then letting them return filthy the next day and giving them cash again and not pay taxes. So it may not be such a great program because they don't like paying taxes.
Right.
It is true, isn't it? The way the corporate politics right now?
Right.
Oh,
yes, it was Cargill. Okay, enough of my political rantings. Manny, what have you got for us this week?
Well, today we're going around the world of food politics, and we're going to show how political influence, phony marketing stories, and bought and paid for medical tests are the backbone of Big Food's attempts to fool all of us Americans that their genetically modified foods and the ever-dangerous Roundup pesticides, are safe and healthy for the world to consume. And while we're discussing some of this, I hope our average listener who has children probably knows they have Roundup in their garage. I'm sure a lot of men use in the garden. And ask yourself, after you listen to all these stories, what happens to my young child who walks out in the grass in the yard after Roundup has been used in the yard, or drinks water out of a hose or something else, or gets their hands wet and then puts them to their face? And when we talk about consuming Roundup and consuming pesticides, we mean consume. We're going to talk about what happens to people who live too close to farms, the ones that use Roundup, and what happens to them when Roundup gets into the water source. Whether that source is a factory farm that feeds animals, or a freshwater stream full of salmon or catfish, or the drinking water the average American relies upon every day for themselves and their families. But we have one item we want to cover before that, and that's medical device software, because, Simon, you're a software guy, and I have just really needed to share this story with you. And I don't know, Ashley, do you want to tell me about it? Do you want me to jump in?
Oh, just jump in.
Well, you know, everything in this world now is governed by software, from digital thermometers to this broadcast. Every computer that everybody's using. We're all familiar with software. We're all familiar with hard drives. We're all familiar with memory and chips and even your camera. The average American knows if they don't like getting the 50 photos on the digital camera, then go to any major store, spend about $40, and buy one that holds two gigs, and it'll hold 640 photos, and you can get up to a couple thousand. So any American who's dealt with memory understands all of these limitations. With these understandings, a report came out where the FDA recommended that they develop procedures, namely the industry, to ensure safety and effective products in the basically medical device market to protect human beings. And I'll start this conversation with...
That sounds good, though. They're going to have safety. This is great.
Yeah, except where's it been all these years?
Wait.
It's been on vacation.
But wait till they hear the safety, but we'll get into that.
You want to tell the story?
No, you tell the story. I love this. I like the way you tell it.
You know, I'm getting shined on by my wife.
She wants
something. All our listeners know. So reporting from Washington is a story about this patient whose list was unstable in critical condition. And so basically what happened is the patient was receiving insulin, anesthetic, and a blood pressure medication through a volumetric infusion pump. And we've all seen those pumps, the glucose pumps, all the other ones. Sometimes
it's where your IV, your medicine, your drips come in.
Yeah. So most people don't realize this, or they do realize that all those machines are run by software designed to control the infusion of a liquid based upon what a nurse or a doctor, and I don't even exclude doctors, they just tell nurses what to do, and of course the poor nurses are now responsible four times the amount of patients they were 5 or 6 years ago. So the nurses are also dependent on this machinery, as are the doctors, because in today's climate, there's simply no way a nurse can tend to the number of patients that she tends to without these kind of devices. So what happened is, with a very busy nurse, with all these patients, his blood pressure dropped.
Oh, wait. Because the problem is this. You go in, you look at the device. Device is working. There's dripping going on, or the device looks like it's working. Then there's an alarm. If the device doesn't work, the alarm goes off.
Yeah, you've seen in all these movies, you know, where the blood pressure drops or something happens and
the alarm goes off
and everybody's running. And, you know, it's that big seminal moment in movies where you might lose a patient. Well, that traditionally is not as chaotic, but there is definitely a
Right, there's an alarm, a little alarm that goes off with this particular device that you can hear down the hallway.
Well, the alarm didn't go off. His blood pressure dropped. The pressure on his brain rose. The pump was replaced, but not in time. The patient was brain dead. So they looked at it, and they described this as an adverse event report. Should be, I killed the patient reports, what it should call it. And basically said it was the software, specifically an overflow in the memory buffer. So, Simon, this is your specialty. Can you imagine making a device so important to a patient's survival that family, nurses, doctors, everybody rely to keep this patient on, and it doesn't have sufficient memory? What do you think that thing sold for? $10,000 and lacks a sufficient memory chip?
Yeah, it's probably more than $10,000. I read a book, it was several years ago, and the title escapes me now, but it was something like the, you know, 10 greatest software mistakes. And I remember one of them concerned a cancer treatment device, you know, radiotherapy, whatever they call it. And the program, the software was completely wrong. They were giving people something like 50 times the amount of radiation that they were supposed to. And needless to say, a bunch of people died. Did we hear about it? Nah.
Well, you know, during the course of this, Simon, I decided I'm going to go in and look up, you know, they're called infusion pumps. Infusion pump lawsuit. Oh, my gosh. I couldn't believe the number of devices and infusion pumps that have been on recall since 2000.
Which, incidentally, is 8 years before this event occurred. So for 8 years, they were having ongoing and continuing problems.
With the various infusion pumps, along with various other devices that are critical to a person's life. But somehow, I don't know, I guess it's just the dang nurse's fault for missing that,
Yeah, Ashley raised this and complained to me that the nurses always get blamed. And as I said to her, the knee-jerk response in every tort situation in this country is, it's the operator, you know? And it reminded me of that story of the couple who were stuck in their Toyota, you know, going 100 miles an hour. They couldn't stop it. Emergency brakes didn't work. Nothing worked. And they eventually ran into a pole, and they died from it. So two couples front and back seat, and immediately Honda issued a statement saying it was operator error. The problem was they didn't check the operator, and the operator turned out to be a CHP or local sheriff. So it gets pretty hard to blame him for being a lousy driver, doesn't it?
It does indeed, and I do remember that story.
Yeah, but that's what they do. So as sure as the sun rises, you know there's someone's going to get blamed for being a bad operator. The same way lawyers immediately find experts who say that basically this is definitely a defect. So it's like both sides are locked into this position. But at the end of the day, the nurses now are getting blamed. So as they have less and less nurses, they increase the amount of work they have to do, increase the number of patients they have to see, they still turn around and blame them for whatever it is they feel is not going right.
Because the nurse is now in charge of LVN, who may have about a year or 2 years' worth of education. And beneath that is a nurse's aide, which there's plenty of those, who are, you know, maybe 6 months' worth of education. And they are responsible for training these individuals to keep an eye on things while they're busy because the hospitals have to make more money. Or who makes more money, Manny? I guess it would be the hospitals or the business people. And so rather than having more nurses that are needed to stay on things like this, there's no way you can possibly stay on it. That's my opinion, at least.
Well, I agree.
And of course, the excuse, if you will, is, well, a nurse can handle more patients because our equipment is smarter.
Thank you. That's
right.
Exactly right. So we all depend upon machinery.
And wait a minute. And coming back to what I said earlier, at the end of the day, when that machinery breaks down after all this chest pounding, they don't take responsibility for it. Their response is, oh, it's the operator. Well, this is the operator you didn't have enough faith on in, or the same operator that you preferred to replace.
That's right. The nurses have been replaced because they used to just go in and hand do these. Every IV was handled by hand, and you would do each drip by hand. And if you had an infusion pump, whoa, that'd be great. But, you know, most of the time you did them by hand. And you were responsible for putting your watch up to that IV on a regular basis and counting the drops. Well, now, because they've short-shifted everybody with RNs, and they're now training LVNs to do the drips. It's just, to me, a very inefficient way of running the hospitals, especially when you're going to have equipment that's not being examined well enough, or you're going to have software failure. I mean, computers will fail.
They always do at the absolute worst point.
Yeah,
right. This was also one of my favorites, and I'm going to say a favorite because I was horrified by it. In January, this is another one that was recalled that I did not see, because, again, whoever sees this stuff? It's got a fancy name. It's called a Medtronic SynchroMed 2 and a SynchroMed IL implantable infusion pump. What this means is it's got this refill kit that's got the meds in it, the medication that goes into your IV, and it goes through this whole kit. Now, the reason for they had a whole massive recall of this particular infusion pump or IV pump, and the pocket fills, the unintended injection of drugs or fluid into the patient's subcutaneous tissue, that means underneath the skin, at the pump pocket site instead of the pump, may result in patient harm, serious injury, and or death due to drug overdose or underdose. Have anybody heard of this or recall on this?
No. And
this is one of countless on the list.
I know. And what bothers me is all these people see their family members in the hospital, look at this equipment going, and they have this false sense that everything's going to get better because this equipment is so wonderful. But at the end of the day, it's not wonderful, and they're being deceitful. Basically, to me, they're experimenting on human beings, and they're using the hospital setting to do it. But that's not, as a lawyer, and I'm going to be a lawyer now instead of a health author, it bothers me that these solutions involve such a low cost to correct. When you're talking about adding a little additional memory or some better quality parts, and when you're talking about sending something for $10,000, $20,000, $25,000, that's the ultimate in greed. That's like, you know, taking a $100,000 car and putting cheap brakes on it, and it just doesn't work. And, you know, to think that this is something small, there are more than 700 deaths linked to these infusion pumps. And there were more than 10,000 complaints received annually between 2005 and 2009. That's 40,000 complaints and 700 deaths over 4 years.
That's just on that one particular pump.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one person dies of this kind of country, nobody pays attention. We get 6 or 7 salmonella deaths. And they're lighting up the states, recalling chicken and everything else, turkey burger, you know, you name it, hamburger. But 700 people die linked to something in the hospital, and I don't see anybody on the news jumping up down going, we got to do some of those infusion pumps before we kill your mother, father, or your child in the hospital. And, you know, I mean,
How about this? How about hiring more nurses? How about hiring more people and better staffing? Sort of short sheeting the hospital so that you can save money and pocket the money. That to me is get more personnel in.
Or how about the FDA requiring tests of these products before they're released? Because there are no true testing. So instead of testing and demanding some level of perfection, the FDA recalled 200,000 pumps from one manufacturer. Oh, wonderful. Did you read that about in the paper? Did you pick up the news and hear one of the great announcers on TV going, today the FDA recalled 200,000 infusion pumps. If you've got a relative in the hospital, I'd be worried. I haven't heard one person say anything like that. Have you?
No. And this is what annoys me. Technology seems to be an area that everyone just goes, oh, it's technology, it's wonderful, you know, it's bound to be good. Well, trust me, folks, technology doesn't work that way. I'll give you a quick lowdown here. In the 1970s, it was reckoned that if you had 100 lines of computer program written in a language called COBOL, there'd be 10 errors in it. Now, that sounds horrible, and it was. people try to improve software. Undoubtedly, the highest quality software written comes from the folks working at NASA. They are very particular. Their error rate is just a couple per 200,000 lines of code, but they still make mistakes.
Sure.
They had a Mars lander that didn't land because someone didn't understand the difference between metric and imperial. If you're dealing with someone's life, you've got a piece of equipment in a hospital. You're relying on that piece of equipment to sustain someone's life. It should be tested. You don't let some clown write, 10 lines of COBOL with 25 errors in it and expect it to work. Doesn't happen. But where are those tests? Why aren't the FDA demanding that the manufacturers of these devices submit to a rigorous test? In the manufacturing world, we call it a ISO 9000 or an ISO 9001. It's ridiculous. Okay,
Let me add something to that. And when it comes to software-based devices, and it does include some insulin pumps and infusion pumps, basically they're cleared through an accelerated process that leaves little or no clinical testing. In other words, the manufacturer provides a big bonus payment to fast-track their product. So the FDA encourages us to get more revenue in, and at the same time, the very act they're encouraging compromising their testing. So, now we're talking about a situation where we've gone from 1 in 4 medical devices in 1997 being used on a patient to more than half, okay? Software problems are now the third leading cause of recalls for medical devices. I mean, that is terrible.
Oh, Manny, I'm telling you, the list from 2000 till now horrified me, mm-hmm. including for diabetics. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was just pumps for diabetics and specific equipment for them and cardiac equipment, and I could not believe the list of recalls.
So in the face of this, the FDA has basically refused to develop procedures to ensure safety. They refuse to develop any type of standards for the effectiveness of device software, and they just don't evaluate the hardware. So at the end of the day, what are they doing? They're doing absolutely nothing because most of these manufacturers have huge political interests there, although Medtronic does not. I have some knowledge of Medtronic because it was founded by a cousin of a longtime client of mine, and I know pretty much what they do, and they're really very sincere at Medtronic. But if you're not going to press them to do more, and you're not going to require them to have a higher standard, they're going to slip like everyone else. If there are no standards, the question is, how far do you push yourself? When there's a standard, I'm going to use lawyers, doctors, and other licensed people. I got out of law school. I would have been very happy to practice law, but they had a standard. I had to pass a bar exam. So I had to spend 3 months studying, 7 days a week, going to courses. And I learned more law in that 4 or 5 months than I would ever have the rest of my life. But if it didn't have that standard and that requirement that I put that effort in, there would have been a whole lot of law I never learned or paid attention to. And that's what happens here. If you don't have a standard, people just go so far and they go, well, screw it. Let's put it out. We need the money. We've invested $1 billion in this product. We can't wait any longer. So somehow the financial pressure always compromises the testing. A professor at a computer science lab at the University of Massachusetts at Amherst, and Amherst is a very free school of all this, said the testing hasn't kept up with today. And he described it as, imagine if we were evaluating car safety and the concept of a horse and buggy in mind, it wouldn't make sense. And that's really what they're doing. They're using horse and buggy techniques to allow the industry to put out their own products. And when they say the regulators were caught off guard as to how significant software would be, I say that's bullshit. I mean, Simon, you just parroted this. I've known this since the 90s. When I was younger and in college, I learned how to use the old IBM 365s. Those are the ones you see in all movies with the white jackets on and the big rooms. Freezing your ass off, I might say, walking around going, what am I doing here with these punch cards? There was a big sign on the wall that said, garbage in, garbage out. You better learn to type properly. So back in the 60s, they were worried about garbage in, garbage out on software. Now, according to what I've read, these programs are so simple, they don't even need a software expert to write it. Am I correct, Simon?
You are exactly right. And if you look at the modern household, I'll guarantee that everything from your telephone to your TV to your cable box to your microwave, probably even your refrigerator, has software in it.
Yeah, I mean, in your car, I have one car that has 3 to 5 chips that operate it. Cadillacs have as many as 5 chips to operate the engines. But we're going to move on to a topic, but I just want to throw out a last thought that I read here that I thought was really interesting that should be obvious to all of us, but we're going to come back to it, and Ashley has a final thought, too, and maybe you do, too. If someone compared this to a phone number, and you go to dial somebody and you miss by one digit, what do you get? You get a wrong number. You get something completely different, a business or someone you didn't intend to call. Well, if you one off on the error in a code, when you're writing code, it can have the same function. It can just shut the machine off or make it function improperly at a critical time. Whenever that individual line of code comes up, whether it's during a crisis or everyone else, that instrument is destined to fail. The same way when you pick up any telephone and you dial that phone number one number off, you're destined to fail to get the person you want. So, Ashley, you wanted to add something to that final comment?
Actually, what I wanted to add was that in defense of the FDA, they had launched an initiative to reduce infusion pump risks back in April. And I thought, wow, this is really going to be great. The USDA and the Drug Administration announced this new initiative back in April. They had they were going to work on moving to establish pre-market requirements for infusion pumps and to make sure that there was a new draft and guidance. And I'm going, oh, my gosh, this sounds great. And they made a list of, software defects, including failures of built-in safety alarms and various problems that they were having. But the conclusion was, okay, advice to user. To help reduce infusion pump risk, the FDA asked clinicians to consider the following general statements. Plan ahead. Be ready to respond to the event of a pump failure. Like that lady didn't, right? Label infusion pump channels and tubing to prevent errors. Like that's not done.
Well, they should label them from the factory.
No, I mean, because when they put the IVs,
put
right. Okay. I mean, like that's not done. Check infusion pump settings and monitor patients for signs of over and under infusion. Blame the nurses. Use available resources to prevent and respond to pump problems. Report adverse effects to the FDA. Now, that was their conclusion.
Well, I acknowledge it seemed funny, but the point is, if you're going to do all that, what do you need the damn pump for? You just leave a nurse there. And please note that these are deaths, the 700 deaths between 205 and 207, and they were getting 10,000 reports between 2005 and 2007. And 4 years later, they're now putting out these guidelines. What the hell went on for 4 years other than
they're just
people
starting
dying?
They're just starting to plan the guidelines.
Oh, I see.
So maybe 5 years from now, we might actually end up with something.
Just,
so
I mean, that reminds me of my favorite line out of Lion and Winter when Richard I asked his mother, played by Katharine Hepburn, what am I going to do about this wedding? My father's sleeping with my future wife, his mistress. And she says, oh, don't worry. It takes a year for the flowers. It takes a year for the invitations. It takes a year for the menu. It takes a year for everyone to get here. It's going to be 4 or 5 years before we get married. He'll tire of her by then. And somehow I think the industry uses the same philosophies. And we're going to apply that philosophy to our next subject, and that's Roundup causing health problems around the world. So does it shock you that U.S. researchers find glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup, in water systems? It seems to me that's a topic, and in every one of our books, and we write countless articles about how the water in our country and in the world are being contaminated. So according to this report, the Mississippi and water systems in Iowa were tested, and they found huge amount of glyphosate levels, not only in the water, but in the air. So if your children are playing out in the yard in Iowa and around Mississippi and around that area where there's a lot of farming, they're breathing in Roundup pesticides. And they found that the key ingredient was found in every stream sample tested. And this is from Scientific American. This is generally a corporate-supported magazine. So let me say it again. Researchers found the key ingredient in Roundup, which is glyphosate, and every stream sample they tested in Mississippi, Iowa, and these tests have gone out, you know, all over there. And one of the comments from the magazine, who quotes Paul Capel, who's an environmental chemist, says, quote, it's out there in significant levels. It's out there consistently. It's not a small portion. So in your area, Simon, they're using Roundup very heavily in the farms. And for all you know, it's in the air that people breathe, although the air that you have has been blowing 30 miles an hour up north towards everybody, right?
That's right. I mean, at the moment, we're just getting fresh BP air from the Gulf.
Oh, yes. Well, what happens when BP air meets, Monsanto Roundup air? Do we get a chemical monster? Maybe that's how Swamp Thing started, right?
And yeah,
it
obviously all ends up in New Jersey, because I believe that was where, it was the Toxic Avenger that was based in New Jersey.
You know, and of course the magazine makes this incredibly funny remark, when a politically guided agency, so apparently we're not the only ones who think the FDA is totally guided by that, needs more tests, and probably more tests after that, and more tests after that, before they make a public statement regarding the health effects of the chemical. You know, most Americans and people, particularly in our area, organic farmers, organic consumers, a lot of whistleblowers, a lot of major magazines and other groups believe the problem is so bad that you don't need any tests. So to use an analogy, we're going to go abroad. This is Monsanto around the world. They go to an area where people can't sue them. Can you imagine some indigent person in Argentina, Brazil, or one of those countries, who's forced to live in a shanty near a farm, is having health problems from Roundup, calling up a local lawyer on their TV, an 800 number, and suing them? Ain't going to happen. Those people have no chance of getting redress and political support.
Well, you know, Manny, before you go on, though, because I want to go back to Mississippi for just a minute, because I just want to do 2 seconds worth of
this. Well, you're just going to freak out Jan.
All right, I'm going to freak her out, because I got to go back there. The long-term effects of having this toxin in the chemical there and the chemical exposure is, well, we'll start short-term, because we'll go easy on Jan. She might have fatigue, headache, skin irritation, nausea, vomiting, and respiratory problems.
Wait a minute. Simon,
that's all.
Simon usually gives that to her. She doesn't need Roundup.
Okay.
That's right. No Roundup needed in this household.
You're rounding her up. So the long-term effect, though, brain and blood disorder, liver, kidney, reproductive damage, breast cancer, gestational diabetes, and greater risk for Parkinson's disease.
Well, Simon, you won't be able to have any more children.
That's not necessarily a bad thing.
I mean, you guys might want to make fun of it, but, you know, you think about it, it's in the water and the streams, and kids are out walking around. I mean, like, you think of the news where people walk around in their bare feet into the water, because that's a neat thing to do.
Well,
and then you go fishing. Let's take out our little fishing pole, and there you pull it up full of pesticides.
Well, we're gonna come back to that one in about a little bit of a minute here. But so here we have, and what happened is a lot of people went to South America to determine how basically Roundup was affecting people there when they're uncontrolled, and Monsanto can't bribe government officials not to make any kind of statement at all. And by the way, when I use the word bribe, I'm talking about lobbying, contributing money to political parties, contributing money to universities, everything that may be legal, but in the business world, we call it bribery. It's not a crime, but it should be. So we start in Argentina. They interviewed this poor lady, Viviana Peralta. She had a baby daughter, suffered acute asthma attacks every time a crop duster sprayed herbicides and pesticides in her house, which sits in the agricultural-rich province, about 600 kilometers, which is about 360 miles from Buenos Aires. Gee, you know, is there any American who doesn't know that if you're going to have dust crofters around homes where people have children, it's not going to affect them? Would we allow this in the United States? Probably not. And I want to tell a story. We have a friend, Tracy, who was raised in the Alabama-Pensacola area, and she tells a story how her father's close friend was a crop duster, and he died of cancer from the chemicals in his early 30s, and since then she's refused to eat anything that has pesticides or be around it. So I know the industry would go, oh, that's anecdotal. It's just a story. Well, you know, as a friend of mine said about anecdotal stories when he was buried on a South Sea island in World War II, it may be an anecdotal story to someone else, but I was the guy in the field watching people die around me. And that's where we go with this Roundup pesticide problem, is the industry can call it anecdotal while they ring up huge numbers. You ever see that thing on, I think it's there's one on Manhattan where the amount of money spent on our national budget is flashes all day. We have one in West L.A. that flashes the number of drunk driving deaths and people going down Santa Monica Boulevard towards the 405 can see the sign ring up all day every year, the number of people dying around the country from that. Well, we should have a big sign that rings up the number of people who die from the side effects of genetically modified foods and their pesticides. What do you think, Simon?
Oh, I agree. However, to do that, we'd have to establish a baseline, you know, proving that it was GMO-caused, and guess what, folks? The FDA won't go there.
Okay, well, let's take this poor young child's blood, okay? They found glyphosate present in her blood. So here you got, and of course I'm sure they'd say, well, the level's too low, it doesn't matter. But anybody with an infant or a young child, the thought of chemical pesticides being found in your child's blood makes the mother's blood boil.
And the question becomes to me, how long was it between the asthmatic attack, her being in the hospital, and finally somebody saying, you know, let's do a blood level? So I would love to have seen, at the point of the asthmatic attack, for them to have done the glyphosate blood check at that point, right in the emergency room.
Well,
in fact, if they have established that somewhere along the line, including asthmatics, including, you know, other pesticides with the asthmatics, and especially with breast cancer, if they included that in the blood and checking the blood at that time, then, you know, maybe there could be a precedent started on this whole thing.
Well, you know, actually, I beg to differ slightly in terms of somewhere like what we're talking about in South America, because this child's exposed for years and years before the mother realized there might be a connection. So by the time this mother got the child treated, I presume the level of pesticide was pretty constant, and whether he was away from his home in the crop dusting a day or a week probably would not have affected
him. Right. Long-term, it stays in the blood a long time.
And so long, the cancer rates in that area have spiked 30% in the last 10 years. So what are they going to do, blame it on McDonald's moving in the neighborhood? I mean, if that isn't a direct tie between the pesticides and the increase of cancer, what is? And that's why I said I'm not sure the blood level would change that much for this particular young girl.
It could drop. I mean, because it could have been at maximum maximum
level. The day after
That's what I'm saying, right at the time of the incident, although it's going to be maintained in the blood, which says how much is actually, like you're saying, she's on an ongoing ongoing time period of getting this exposure.
Well, Simon, I'm going to illustrate Ashley's point. At peak time, which is following a crop dusting event, the residents and neighbors in that area say their lips turn blue and their tongues swell. So maybe you're right. Maybe they should be taking blood tests.
Right then on the spot.
But it also tells you how much lingers in the air. So along with that happening, all the chickens died. Dogs and cats shed their hair. Bees disappear and birds become scarce. Boy, you know, it sounds like I'm reading the plagues out of the Bible. Doesn't it sound like Moses was summoning the plagues? Who knows? Maybe Moses threw a quarter in the payphone and called Monsanto and said, hey, send some of that shit down here. We need it right away.
That's right.
You don't know. And it's just not San Jose. The province of Chaco, which borders on Paraguay, they did a study over the past years, and they suggest the cancer rates have tripled.
In a 10-year study? Wow.
And the increase in malformed children has quadrupled. One malformed child is enough. It is too much. Tripled. They don't give a number, but it would be horrifying to know what
that means. It's interesting that they were allowed to do a study. Uh-huh. Well, Santa couldn't stop them down there, I guess.
What do you think? There's tensions between the residents and rice farmers who use Roundup and spray it from airplanes.
On rice.
Oh, yeah. On rice.
So, the genetically modified rice. I don't know if people know that there's genetically modified rice now, right now, so I want to make that real clear. It is made specifically so that they can take and use more glyphosate, which used to never be used. So. Uh-huh.
Well, let's talk about the terror of it, Simon. I got up at 6 o'clock this morning, like every red-blooded American male, and kind of stumbled in the bathroom mumbling and sat down on the toilet. And I was sleeping with some earplugs in for a variety of reasons, and I could still hear an airplane. And sometimes the airplanes going into Van Nuys and Burbank kind of cheat over the mountains where we live and come in way too low. I mean, we've seen airliners where we could read the digits on it and the names on them. Something our neighbor complains a lot about. And by the way, there's a huge stink in L.A. about helicopters flying too low around neighborhoods with sightseers. So imagine, I heard this airplane the entire time I was there. It was loud enough for me to hear. It was a smaller plane. My experience flying told me it's between a 170 and a 300, which is a kind of a noisy airplane at that time of morning. And I thought to myself, what if that were a crop duster? How would I feel if I lived in those areas and I'm playing with my child, or I'm cooking dinner or breakfast, excuse me, early in the morning, and dealing with my family, and I hear that airplane coming over, and I know it's crop dusting the fields close to me, and that it's going to shed all of this horrible pesticide in my neighborhood when my children are going out to play, and some of those people are disadvantaged, and children don't have shoes or very little of it. And what the terror these parents must feel every day with this airplane's going by. Simon, could you imagine Jan dealing with that?
No, I couldn't. You know, I lived in the San Diego area and spent a good deal of time in you know, your neck of the woods. And I remember the reports about poor air quality. You know, we advise asthmatics, people with breathing problems to stay indoors, but we're not talking about smog here. You know, we're talking about man-made pesticides coming from airplanes in rural areas. This is horrific. It shouldn't be allowed to happen. An airplane may only be at 200 feet. Spraying a field, but there will be wind, and that pesticide is going to travel. Not all of it arrives on the crop that they want it to arrive on. In fact, even if they were to deliver the pesticide using more traditional methods of a tractor with a large tank attached to the back of it, it's still bad. Yeah, if pesticides affect people, don't use them.
I agree. And let's go to the next phase of this story, too, that I really like about this is, you know, when you talk about what goes on, you always find there's an embryologist, a scientist, someone who refuses to toe the line. So at the University of Buenos Aires, his name is Andres Carrasco. So he published a study in late 2010 demonstrating the toxic effects of glyphosate can have on amphibian embryos. His work has earned him no shortage of enemies. He was physically attacked on a visit to the cities we're talking about, and they had to cancel his conference. Physically attacked? You mean Monsanto paid somebody and the farmers did to beat him up. And he said he didn't even make any new discoveries. Quote, "I just confirmed what other scientists had already discovered. The scientific evidence is there. Above all, there are hundreds of ill and malformed people who are living proof of this health emergency." So I'm just lucky Monsanto didn't have them killed. You know, that's the type of thing major corporations do. And those who doubt it can always enjoy John Le Carre's little expose of British drug politics in Constant Gardener, a book I think you enjoyed, right, Simon?
Oh, I love The Constant Gardener.
Yeah, you know, and you know, that is based on a true story about what happened in Nigeria.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, so.
But Le Carre.
They don't like you, they'll kill you, right?
Yeah. I mean, Le Carre writes fiction, but rarely is it fiction.
Right. So, you know, how deeply does this go? Well, how about a little story on how the court rulings in Europe are now jeopardizing some of the GO coexistence? And what's interesting about this is a bee farmer who basically was having trouble with his honey discovered that basically Monsanto's MON810 maize corn was not covered by an authorization and was being grown illegally on this farm. And they basically contaminated everything. So the European Court of Justice basically ruled that honey containing traces of genetically modified products, even if it's unintentional, quote, must also always be regarded as food produced from a GMO. So they allowed the farmers to have compensation because their farms were polluted. See, in America and Canada, Monsanto sues anybody they pollute, claiming they've stolen their private intellectual property.
Right. Wow, that was, I know, that definitely is a flip. But I thought this is really significant, the fact that they have won this.
Yeah, it is. It opens up the door to damage claims against Monsanto. And maybe people in the United States will be inspired to understand because that they can pursue this issue. And as if our listeners don't know, a group of organic farmers in March sued Monsanto in the New York courts, and they're fighting it out right now. And Monsanto's spending probably $2 to $4 million a month in attorney's fees to defend this, where they just got whacked in Europe for the same thing. You know, and what I find most interesting about all this stuff is that even though it paves way for basically reimbursement, the problem is the government's against them. So basically they took a position that this highlights how conventional and genetically modified agriculture cannot coexist. When a GM crop is grown in open fields, contamination is impossible to stop. And you notice they use the word contamination. That's not Monsanto's word. They would like to say to you that what they're doing is wonderful, but probably 90% of the world thinks that what they're doing is contaminating the world. The problem is the other 10% consists of governments, government employees, and officers who are being bribed by them. So, you know, that's the problem.
Okay, one of the big things about Monsanto GM seeds is that they claim they're sterile. But we all know that's a load of bull crap. All right?
Right.
Particularly with a crop like alfalfa. I mean, how can they possibly claim that they can contain their GM alfalfa. I mean, it can't be done. And guess what? If it does spread to the neighbor's farm, Monsanto is going to sue the neighbor. Oh, excuse me.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that this, like Manny said, I hope that some of this EU legislation that's happening right now, that is filtered now from UK into Germany, I'm really hoping that this will have an impact on America and the fact that of these lawsuits, because Monsanto does have to be stopped. I mean, we need to have a choice here. We need to have a choice as to whether or not if we want to eat this toxic food that's untested and buy into their propaganda, because they're going to offer it cheap at first until they have total control, right?
Right.
Well, and then it's going to go up.
Well, let's talk about why. You know, WikiLeaks has released more cables to show how entangled the United States government is in corporate agricultural interests, okay? Basically, U.S. diplomats have been told to basically make an effort to protect GM interests abroad. That word GM interests is really a misnomer. Why don't they just call it what it is? Monsanto's interests. DuPont does have hybrids and has DuPont hybrid, but they're not the big player.
And there's some generics coming out of China, which is even more frightening.
But it's Syngenta, a Swiss corporation who has huge ties and owns massive companies in the United States, and Monsanto's. So Monsanto.
Swiss company.
Yeah, so let's talk about several of the cables. They describe biotechnology outreach programs in countries across the globe, including African, Asian, and South American countries, where Western biotech agriculture had yet to gain a foothold. Ash and I get emails from Africa, Asia, none from South America, from concerned people who started groups like ours to fight them, who republish our articles, download our shows, and are distributing them to try to convince others to stay away. Basically, people in these countries don't want Monsanto. They want their money, they want their bribery, they don't want their politics, and they don't want the consequences of the food. And they don't rely on us as Americans. They rely on this stuff in other third world countries, Argentina and other places where it's having devastating effects. So some of the cables, and one of them, a well-known 210 cable from the Morocco embassy, they asked the State Department for funds to send U.S. biotech experts and trade industry representatives to target countries for discussions.
Target. Let's underscore the word target.
Right.
Okay, for discussion. I mean,
with high-profile politicians and agricultural officials. So basically, they're asking the United States government to fund airplane tickets, costs, and other things for biotech experts, Monsanto employees. What's going on? Can't Monsanto afford its own airplane ticket? It has to burden American taxpayers to pay for the airplane tickets and expenses of their employees to go bully foreign nations to sell their products on our dime.
With U.S. diplomats.
And don't want to pay American taxes and then spend the money abroad in other things, and there's no trickle-down with Monsanto. That money goes abroad. And the only trickle-down we're going to talk about next. But isn't that amazing, Simon?
The whole thing is a closed loop, though. I mean, Monsanto has created an environment where up-and-coming researchers, PhDs, are funded by the company. I mean, didn't they establish a seat about at a university specifically designated to be supportive of GM crop development?
Well, there's more than one. There was Iowa State. We're going to talk about Missouri and Hawaii. There's Texas A&M. They're all over the place. But right now, let's stay with the foreign, because we're going to come back to the States when we're done in a minute. And it turns out France is one of their main targets, because, as you know, France has been opposed to GM crops despite all the outside pressure. And what rankled the U.S. government is a French documentarian had the nerve to make a show called The World According to Monsanto, which made me laugh hysterically. I thought I was watching a ABC spy show. And basically, this attacks the U.S. biotech regime, primarily Monsanto.
And the U.S. government.
And its revolving door relationship with the U.S. government and all the various officials. And they cite in there, in fact, they interviewed former Secretary of Agriculture Dan Glickman, who said he felt that he was under pressure and that more tests should have been conducted on biotech products before they were approved. Duh. Is anybody shocked to hear that?
He's the Secretary of Agriculture, U.S. Agriculture, correct?
Understand, French people, they're just emotional.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Well, you know,
I forgot.
As an anti-science hippie, I understand.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So, and what I think irked them the most is when I laughed, I saw it about 4 months ago after we'd written a lot of our articles on politics and things that are in our books. So they start listing the people. It says John Ashcroft, who is, as we know, the former head of justice, received contributions from Monsanto when he was reelected, as did Tommy Thompson, Secretary of Health. Ann Veneman, Secretary of Agriculture, was the director of Calgene, which belonged to Monsanto. Rumsfeld was the CEO of Searle, a Monsanto subsidiary. And Clarence Thomas, the Supreme Court Justice, was a former lawyer for Monsanto. And they went on listing all the other ones in our book. I mean, they're just countless. It looks like the federal government is a retirement home or a vacation hiatus form for Monsanto employees. So at the end of this, they caught all of these various memos saying, and this is one of my favorites, is embassy diplomats requested that Washington agencies provide talking points. So in other words, they wanted the FDA to give them pro-GMO talking points so they could use them to try and to put a more positive role on biotech at these world conferences.
Oh, I'm sorry. They couldn't afford their own ghostwriters?
Yeah.
No. You know, times are tough in the federal government.
So my favorite is when nobody would get along, Craig Stapleton. I'm going to repeat his name. Craig Stapleton, the former ambassador of France under Bush, was instructed to punish EU countries that did not support the use of GM crops. Oh, wonderful. We got an ambassador who's suggesting at troublesome times in the world when we're trying to get some unity with other nations to handle Iraq, Afghanistan, and all these various revolutions, we're threatening to punish them because they're not buying food from Monsanto.
How do they punish them? Through the trade agreement, right?
Uh-huh.
It means that we won't buy any goods from their country. You don't buy our toxic crap and our glyphosate and everything that's not tested. We're not going to do trade with you.
Okay, and here's my favorite, Simon. This is quote out of a memo, the WikiLeaks link. Quote, Country Team Paris, which, by the way, consists of Monsanto people, according to the other basic emails on this type of thing, Country Team Paris is a mixture of American diplomats and the Monsanto executives. They recommend that we calibrate a target retaliation list that causes some pain across the EU, since this is a collective responsibility, but that also focuses in part on the worst culprits. And I underscore this topic, worst culprits.
What does that mean, Manny?
It means that Monsanto, American diplomats, maybe the CIA and others were sitting on a park bench somewhere trying to act like they weren't being deceptive spies, putting together a retaliation list of the worst culprits of nations in Europe.
Culprits against them? Against Monsanto?
That disagree with Monsanto's position on GMOs. And there are just countless ones. There are a series of of dispatches on how the U.S. government and the diplomats tried to pressure Spain and threaten Spain to cut them off if they didn't buy from Monsanto. I mean, can you imagine why we have such a poor relationship with some of these people?
No, not at all. In fact, I was trying to think of an analogy here. You know, it'd be something like some country that has one grapevine in the entire country saying, okay, France, if you don't buy our bottle of wine, we're not going to buy any of your stinking wine.
Well, but Simon, I wish it were that simple. The U.S. government, through its ambassador, threatened Ireland that they would cut them off from loans while Ireland was in desperate financial shape from the World Bank if they didn't sell genetically modified foods. That's not taking your ball at home. That's threatening every resident of the country of Ireland, you know. And I have cousins who live in Dublin. My family primarily lived in Dublin, not in London, most of them. And they just think Monsanto is Darth Vader. They think they're the ugliest and meanest corporation in the world. And when you read this stuff, imagine an Irish citizen picking up the paper and finding out the American government is threatening your government with no loans during a recession, depression, if you don't sell Monsanto foods. How would you take that?
Well, I'd be horrified. I mean, what is Monsanto trying to do in Ireland? Are they trying to introduce GM Guinness?
Yeah. Well, they have GM Budweiser. Budweiser is made by genetically modified corn and genetically modified hops sold by Monsanto. And they're proud to put a big sign on a genuine Iowa corn. Well, you know, anyone in our field, Iowa corn means genetically modified corn and high fructose corn syrup. For all we know, Budweiser is made of high fructose corn syrup these days.
It very likely is, but the good news is they're still using the 100-year-old three wood chips to flavor the beer.
Oh, I won't even go into that. You know what Budweiser's referred to. You know, so back to your comments about the U.S., where those people go, oh, well, Monsanto's doing it abroad, and I don't care about the people in Europe. Well, Monsanto has a program of doing the same thing here, but they do it a little differently here. Recently, they gave $500,000 to the University of Hawaii. They gave $100,000 to the University of Missouri. And listen to what it's for. The fund will assist graduate students pursuing a master's or Ph.D. degree and a postdoctoral researchers of the college related to the study of plant science and protection. You mean Monsanto's interest. So basically, all they're talking about, and then the head of the university says, Hawaii's future leaders of sustainable industries and a strong, diversified economy will benefit from this. Well, what do you mean? They're going to benefit from learning how to use genetically modified foods? I love Hawaii. I've been going there since I was a teenager. For those of us on the West Coast, Hawaii is our Caribbean. And to think that Hawaiian feels as beautiful as they are to be contaminated by genetically modified foods makes me want to throw up. I was quite frankly
shocked when I read that particular article. It's very carefully worded, but the meaning is obvious. Okay, we're going to give you money and forget about all your great natural products. We're going to have some unnatural ones for you.
Yeah, and then they say things like including financial support for student research and participation in national professional conferences. In other words, going to send them to Monsanto conferences, like doctors go to Pfizer and Merck conferences to sell drugs. I mean, isn't that the same thing, Simon?
Oh, it's exactly the same thing. I mean, this is bribery at its most basic level.
Well, the other one, too, is you probably read that quote from the interim dean that said, because of workforce shortages, there's a critical need to educate the next generation of researchers preparing to tackle the difficult problem of producing more food on less land in a sustainable way, using less water and energy to feed a growing population.
Okay, excuse me while I hit the ceiling, and you can then peel me off.
Go for it.
It's very upsetting, Simon, isn't it? I mean, there's been enough people throughout the world saying this is so untrue over and over, and unfortunately people will still buy into the propaganda.
Well, let's talk about a couple of them. Using less water and energy, that's totally untrue.
Untrue.
There's no greater whore for energy than a factory farm.
To feed a growing population they're going to kill?
Well, wait a minute.
First of all, you're not going to feed that population more. Okay.
How about comparing feeding free-range chickens and cattle where nature provides sunlight that's healthy with vitamin D, and putting them in a barn with overhead fluorescent lights 24 hours a day that's 5 to 10,000 feet containing thousands of animals. How much power does the sun use? I mean, I've never got a bill that said sun, $1,000, but I guarantee you the power bills at some of these plants with these indoor factory farms are tens of thousands of dollars.
Now and consistently, the farmers have said that the seeds cost went from like $6 whatever it is, a bag, to like $60 a bag. And that means that the feed is a lot more expensive, and the pesticide is a lot more expensive. So where are they saving money again to feed the world?
And then I want to come back to why before we leave that beautiful state, because I've got to tell you, their leaders are delusional, okay? Monsanto additionally supports higher education in Hawaii through internships. Oh, yes, we want a beautiful place like Hawaii sending interns to Monsanto so they can return home and screw it up. Scholarships. Gee, you got a scholarship from Monsanto. What are you supposed to learn on scholarship from Monsanto? Well, that's like going on scholarship from the CIA. You're going to come out a liberal, anti-science hippie if the CIA pays for it? Nope. Look at the Heritage Foundation. They've been supporting scholarships at USC, Stanford, and other places to teach these little right-wing participants on their foreign policy things. Same thing with Monsanto. And then I love it. Faculty tours. Okay, so I take a bunch of faculty, send them to New Orleans, get them drunk, you know, for a weekend, get dancing girls and tell them, sell Monsanto. And these guys are just so happy to go, they come back with a new deal. And then how about contributions towards various educational programs? I can assure you, not one of them is organic stuff. I can't imagine them donating to any speech made by Jeffrey Smith or, you know, any of the other leaders.
They're not allowed in.
They're not even allowed in the school. They, in fact, by doing this, they managed to bar anyone into the organic field, particularly Jeffrey Smith and I forgot Michael's name, the professor Pollack at the University of California. They've used that to bar them from campus from speaking against them. They just did this on the University of Missouri, where they gave a $100,000 gift to be distributed over the next 3 years, used to support a Monsanto undergraduate fellowship program.
Now, I want to go back a second, though, Manny, because Monsanto is partners with the USDA. So if you go to the agricultural site, you'll find that Monsanto is partners with the USDA. So does that mean our tax dollar is now going to Monsanto that is then giving gifts of our tax dollar to these schools so they could all be taught how to do genetically modified, unnatural, horrible things that have been untested?
Those are called Pell Grants, because anytime you give a Pell Grant for someone to finish an education who is a Monsanto undergraduate, the government is paying him to go to work for Monsanto and to produce genetically modified crops.
So if I wanted to go back to school right now, the only way I could get a grant is if I said I love Monsanto and I bow down to them and I kiss their feet?
No, but the fact is if you're enrolled at the University of Hawaii, Missouri, Ohio, Iowa State, Texas A&M, and some of the others, and you're applying for a graduate degree in plant science, et cetera, it's really clear that you're headed for DuPont, Monsanto, et cetera. But the bottom line is the government places no limitation on grants that will benefit specific areas of industry.
Especially their partners.
Sure. So especially with their partners. So basically these students are getting a $5,800 grant from Monsanto every year to go with their Pell Grant so they can finish with graduate degrees in selling Monsanto junk. You know, and if you think it isn't so, here's a comment out of their own news release. Students participating in Monsanto fellowship programs will conduct an extended internship with a plant science research group where they participate in research projects, use advanced molecular and genetic methods, participate in fieldwork, and attend lab meetings and seminars. Okay, so where would that be? That would simply be at a Monsanto-approved site, right?
Oh, absolutely.
And then the release goes on and says students also will be encouraged to interact with Monsanto scientific staff and apply for summer internships at the country. Oh, my God. You know,
at the company. So they're going to learn the same techniques that Monsanto has done to hide everything through their scientific staff and bullying.
So what we're going to have...
So we're going to have bullying students who are paid by our U.S. government to go out and sell this horrible product that is basically banned everywhere across the country.
So we
or
have,
the world.
So we had some other topics we're going to discuss today that we're going to do on Saturday. So before we wrap this up, because I wanted to get to what the pesticides do health-wise, we were going to discuss cloned meat and fried bubble gum and all these delights. On, we're going to do that on Saturday morning. So if you wonder about fried bubble gum and cloned meats, I think Saturday morning you got to come back. But before we go, I want to discuss what this is all about, Ashley, which is your favorite, is the industry is writing all these self-serving articles. The one I found really made me laugh. GM foods and pesticides pose no danger to health.
No, wait a minute. You're going to read this article and then expect me to keep my mouth shut and we're going to close.
No, no.
What do you think of that, Simon?
No, I'm going to let you tell us about this. All I want to point out is the New York Times published a series of articles about how the companies were in cahoots and the government and Monsanto and all the rest and accused the U.S. Secretary Tom Vilsack of perhaps under pressure from the presence of coming to Monsanto. Well, he's a Monsanto guy from Iowa. There's no pressure on him. And, you know, as he goes through it, you know, he talks about how they basically are putting out all these different things and they're just saying, you know, for example, and this one really got me, okay? It said Bruce Ames, who's a professor emeritus of biochemistry at Berkeley, spoke of the adverse effects and the unfounded fear of pesticides may have a low-income population.
Yeah.
The word unfounded fear of pesticides from a college professor tells me this guy has been bought and paid for by Monsanto. I want to pull his pants down and see the Monsanto tattoo.
Why?
On his back.
He's saying he's worried about it.
No, he isn't. He isn't. Yet.
Oh, he's saying, oh, I'm sorry, the unfounded, there's the key word, see there?
Unfounded
fears. Unfounded fears of pesticides?
He didn't just say that.
I don't plan
on getting into it today, but a subject for Saturday, and I'll just whet your appetite. This comes directly from the Splendor website. You can now make everything you sweeten a little bit better for you with Splendor Essentials sweetener products. It's the same great taste you love, plus a small boost of healthy nutrients, B vitamins, antioxidants, or fiber.
Yeah, what, no crystal meth?
Right.
No. So I'm going to end this show on this quote because we're coming back to all of this.
Oh, let's do Splenda on Saturday.
Yeah, and I mean, this one.
We got to do Splenda.
This same Dr. Ames had the nerve to say many synthetic chemicals and pesticides are inaccurately labeled as hazardous to human health because of the results of high-dose animal studies. Huh? They're saying that pesticides... So, ladies and gentlemen, go peel that hazardous sign off all the pesticides in your garage, because guess what? They only hurt people in Argentina. They don't hurt America, right?
Pull out your passport before you eat it, because the pesticide will know the difference.
You hold up your passport and you say, read this, you MF-er, before you go on my lawn.
Right. You
know? Actually, I'm sure the warning label says not to be used on your dog.
I have to put Bruce and Ames' idiocy into this whole thing. He has this quote that just made me fall over. The number of chemicals derived from roasting the beans of a single cup of coffee far exceeds the amount of pesticide residues the average person consumes an entire year. You know what he does in his spare time? He sells Brooklyn Bridges. I mean, this guy is so full of manure, it is hysterical.
I'm sorry, so does he do, like, the tests that they did for BP, take up the fish and smell it? and you'll know whether I have toxin. So he runs around and he sniffs people and says, oh, gee, you know, this pesticide residue really isn't in this person or in the fruit, and we're just fine.
The problem with Bruce Ames is he's geographically challenged. He thinks Argentina is a community of illegal aliens in East L.A. That's his problem.
Okay, well, now I know who he is.
And I guess it doesn't matter if a Latino anywhere in this world dies of pesticides. And to me, his comment about the minorities, low income, and how he disregards the suffering of people around the world is racist. And I think that Monsanto is an extraordinarily racist and insensitive company that will kill Indians, Pakistanis, Africans, South Americans, anybody in their way to get what they want. So at the end of the day, that may sound like a terrible
accusation. Well, there, he says it again. This one did it to me again. Despite the evidence of this company, many people, especially in low-income populations, they may hesitate to buy the conventionally grown produce they can actually afford, because that's all that's made affordable to them, and that's the part that he forgets to add, you know. And since they can ill afford expensive organic produce caused by the industry, they may then consume lower, fewer, healthful fruits and vegetables, Dr. Ames.
Well, let's be honest about the poverty in the United States and the poor. They can't even afford the bad GMO vegetables. They're buying dollar meals at McDonald's. So to say that is also irresponsible. We need to provide vegetables, fruits, vegetables, and other healthy food to minorities, the poor in this country, regardless of race, creed, or color, and get them off of fast foods before they all die from them. And at this point, I probably quit before I joined the two of you in a rage, okay? You know, and I end it with this quote from the infamous Dr. Whalen, who has got to be, she looks like a troll on TV selling biotech information. This woman who claims to be a scientist who runs a Monsanto, another industry run whorehouse of intellectual information, says the only difference between organic and conventional produce is that the former is more expensive. Health-wise, however, they are neutrally equivalent. Well, you know, Elizabeth, tell that to my cancer tumors. Tell that to my malignant cancer. Tell that to my colon. Tell that to my Crohn's disease. And tell that to every other American in the United States who's suffering through with diabetes and a variety of cancer and other things that are caused by these products. I guess the increase in all these things, and now one out of two men are going to die of cancer, one out of three women are going to die of cancer, I guess are nutritionally equivalent. And on that note, Ashley, you have anything to say before we get off the air?
Don't get me started on Elizabeth Whalen, because she said things on, she was recently on TV and said things about, you know, the levels of toxin, and it doesn't matter if it's in the blood, it's going to be in everybody's blood. And, I mean, it was like the things that comes out of this woman's mouth, I actually wonder if she hears herself or what she reads. I don't understand what material she's reading, other than maybe she was paid to go to a Monsanto school to be taught with Monsanto's teaching, or one of these schools. I don't know, Manny.
I know, but we're going to end the show with this thought. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Please join the food revolution. It's simple. Just read the labels and reject foods with addictive chemical ingredients. Avoid genetically modified foods and genetically engineered vegetables. And vote with your paycheck. If you want to extend your life by additional 10 years, consider changing your diet to organic. You don't have to suffer, and it won't cost you a lot if you shop carefully. Remember, you can eat the same foods you're eating now, but make sure the ingredients are organic, just like your grandmother used to make. Bye for now, Simon. It's all yours.
I want to thank Manny and Ashley for taking time to talk with us today, and we will be back on Saturday at 1 p.m. Eastern with our sister program, Surviving the 21st Century. Join us then. We are going to have lots and lots of lovely stuff to talk about. Till then, this is Simon Barrett wishing everyone a happy and healthy day and week and life. Till Saturday, goodbye.